Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I look forward to working with the Senate in the confirmation process. I hope that as the Senate and American people learn more about me, they will see that I am an ordinary person who has been blessed with extraordinary opportunities and experiences.
And that clip from the day that President Obama introduced Judge Sonia Sotomayor to the nation. Today, the nominee from the Bronx will be introduced by New York's two senators, Kirsten Gillibrand first and then Chuck Schumer later this afternoon. And here's a moment to look forward to this week. How about Al Franken questioning Sonia Sotomayor as the newest member of the Senate Judiciary Committee meets the wise Latina from the Bronx who hopes to become the newest Supreme Court justice? Of course, she'll have to endure Jeff Sessions and Orrin Hatch along the way and the party-hopping Arlen Specter. But that Al Franken moment will come up. The hearings are getting underway right now. Let's listen in for just a minute live. We're not going to stay with this for too long right now, but here is the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Pat Leahy. He's opening it up. Let's listen.
Extraordinary woman, her excess, her understanding of the constitutional duties she's faithfully performed for the last 17 years. And I hope all senators will join together as we did when we considered President Reagan's nomination of Sandra Day O'Connor as the first woman to serve on the Supreme Court. There, every Democrat and every Republican voted to confirm her. This hearing is an opportunity for Americans to see and hear Judge Sotomayor for themselves and to consider her qualifications. It's the most transparent confirmation hearing ever held. Her decisions and confirmation materials have been posted online and made publicly available. The record is significantly more complete than that available when we considered President Bush's nomination of John Roberts and Samuel Alito just a few years ago.
All right. Where? We'll find out that web address and let you know so you can look at the record for yourself. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, is in the room at the Capitol. He joins us now. Hi, Todd.
Hey, Brian. How are you?
I'm okay. And Jamie Floyd is with us as well. Jamie, who is the anchor of Best Defense on the Legal News Network in session. She was part of the Clinton White House, where she actually worked on judicial vetting. And as some of you know, Jamie Floyd is a sometimes substitute host on this program. Hi, Jamie.
Good morning.
So, Todd, wise Latina from the Bronx meets Eminence's Grease from around the country. How's this going to go? Who starts? What's the schedule?
Well, they've just started, and I'm actually standing outside of the hearing room here. I just stepped out in order to speak with you, Brian, and I'm peering in the back door looking at Chairman Leahy as he reads his statement. So he's about 50 yards away through the door and down the aisle. Sonia Sotomayor stepped into the room about 5 minutes before 10, actually, escorted by Jeff Sessions, the ranking member from Alabama, and Pat Leahy, and they escorted her to her seat. She sat down, and those dozens and dozens of photographers in the well of the hearing room here in the Hart Senate office building clicking off like a swarm of locusts, you know, click, 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 like that. And she sat there still with a smile on her face and took it, you know, the way any high-profile witness at a Senate hearing does these days as those cameras fly. Leahy gaveled him in about a minute early, and he's reading his opening statement now. We just heard part of it. One part that I was just had one ear to, Brian, while you were doing your intro. Pat Leahy made a point to raise other firsts in Supreme Court history. He mentioned Justice Brandeis, the first Jewish justice. He mentioned Thurgood Marshall, definitely laying the groundwork that this is an historic nominee by all accounts. All, you know, Republicans acknowledge that as well. And just a little of my own interpretation, you know, making it clear from the outset that anyone who opposes her is opposing another peg in the history of racial equality on the court, putting her on the same peg with Brandeis and Marshall, Sotomayor number three, you know, letting everyone know that if you oppose her, you're standing in the way of history, I suppose. But he's still reading his opening statement.
Right. And in that live clip, the live little excerpt that we dove into there a minute ago, he was going into some of the people who got confirmed 98-2 and
right.
something like this. Let's listen a little more. Let's see where Leahy is right now, chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, live.
There's only one law. And, Judge, I remember so well. You sat in my office and you said that ultimately and completely a judge has to follow the law no matter what their upbringing has been. That's the kind of fair and impartial judging the American people expect. That's respect for the rule of law. But that's the kind of judge Judge Sotomayor has been. It's the kind of fair and impartial justice she'll be, the American people deserve. Judge Sotomayor has been nominated to replace Justice Souter, whose retirement last month has left the court with only 8 justices. Justice Souter served the nation with distinction for nearly 2 decades on the Supreme Court.
Senator Leahy will go back in again in a few minutes as he lauds the outgoing Justice Souter. And making the point early in that statement there, just as we were coming into it, that I think will be at the heart of a lot of these hearings for the Republicans, and that is whether she is really there to follow the law or to pursue some other agenda. And Jamie Floyd, let me read you a question for Sotomayor, posed by the former Homeland Security Secretary, Michael Chertoff, Bush appointee. He has this question for Sotomayor in the New York Times today.
Yeah.
He asks, and this is a little long, but I'm going to read the whole thing because it's interesting. If confirmed, you will be the only member of the Supreme Court who is a federal trial judge. You know that the factual findings of a trial judge or jury are based on a carefully assembled body of evidence. In your opinion, to what degree is an appeals judge confined by that evidential record in reaching decisions? When, if ever, is it appropriate for an appellate judge to rely upon other extrinsic sources like social science studies, polls, or academic writings in deciding a case? So, Jamie Floyd, with your background as a lawyer and a legal TV reporter, is there a simple answer to that question?
Yes, and I think her record speaks to that question, and indeed, as a federal trial judge, she would say most often you rely on the evidential record, and she has in her experience as a trial judge and as a federal judge. And you only step beyond the record when you have to, because there isn't a record to rely upon when you're making new law, because there isn't a long precedential record for you to rely upon, even as a Supreme Court justice. And she's been pretty conservative. I mean, it's very interesting to have her critics now suggest that she's been an activist, because when you do look at her record, she's hardly been that. Some of her spoken words at colleges and universities and gatherings of that sort have been somewhat controversial, and that's been talked about quite a bit. But when you look at her record as a judge, and I think when she answers this question, which will be put to her certainly by some of the senators on this committee, she will answer very clearly that a judge is bound by the law. And it is only when the law is uncertain, unclear, or has not yet been made that you start to look at social science and other evidence. And that is what she has done as a judge, and I think that will be an easy question for her to answer.
And one of the main antagonists from the Republican side will be Republican Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, mm-hmm. who is giving his opening statement right now. Let's listen to a little bit of Jeff Sessions live.
And I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me under the Constitution and laws of the United States, so help me God. These principles give the traditional system its moral authority, which is why Americans respect and accept the ruling of courts even when they disagree. Indeed, our legal system is based on a firm belief in an ordered universe and objective truth. The trial is the process by which the impartial and wise judge guides us to truth. Down the other path lies a brave new world where words have no true meaning and judges are free to decide what facts they choose to see. In this world, a judge is free to push his or her own political or social agenda. I reject that view, and Americans reject that view. We have seen federal judges force their political and social agenda on the nation, dictating that the words "under God" be removed from the Pledge of Allegiance and barring students from even private, even silent prayer in schools. Judges have dismissed the people's right to their property, saying the government can take a person's home for the purpose of developing a private shopping center. Judges have, contrary to longstanding rules of war, created a right for terrorists captured on a foreign battlefield to sue the United States government in our own country. Judges have cited foreign laws, world opinion, and a United Nations resolution to determine that a state death penalty law was unconstitutional. I'm afraid our system will only be further corrupted, I have to say, as a result of President Obama's views that in tough cases, the critical ingredient for a judge is, quote, the depth and breadth of one's empathy, close quote, as well as his words, quote, their broader vision of what America should be. Like the American people, I have watched this process.
Alabama's Jeff Sessions, his opening remarks as a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee as they get ready to question Judge Sonia Sotomayor in her Supreme Court confirmation hearing. She is sitting there listening to Jeff Sessions. Right now we have Todd Zwillick from The Takeaway, who is right there at the hearing, and Jamie Floyd, host of Best Defense on the legal news on a legal news network on television. And Jamie, let me go back to you on this. What Jeff Sessions is setting up a line of questioning there.
Yes.
Not only with respect to the empathy that President Obama has talked about wanting in a Supreme Court justice, and whether that's in opposition to just looking at the law. Sotomayor herself has also talked about compassion, but also listing some decisions and some ways of looking at the law that he doesn't like. How specific do you think he's going to get with her with respect to, say, citing what other countries have done in their legal systems in a Supreme Court decision and whether that's legitimate, or bringing up actual, you know, particular cases and asking her if she agrees with the decisions?
I think he'll be very specific. And this opening statement that he's making goes precisely to the question you asked before we went to that clip. It is this question of activism versus restraint. And it's always interesting. The challenging party always accuses the nominee of being activist, although it's always the claim, whether it's the Republican or the Democratic nominee. It is what we ask of our judges, to try to follow the law, even if the law is not what the judge personally would want it to be. And the challenge for a judge is to follow that law, and we've seen some recent decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court where Justice Scalia and Justice Kennedy have said, look, this is the law, even though the longstanding law is not what I personally might want it to be. I have to follow it as a judge. But judges are human beings, and so Sessions, I think, will very pointedly ask her about some of her decisions, some of her statements about compassion, some decisions that have been made overseas and decisions that she has made and that have been made here by our U.S. Supreme Court and by her, statements that have been made by President Obama on his choices for the Supreme Court, even as a candidate. And he will ask her and pin her down. But she has been prepared, Brian, very specifically for everything that she will be asked. All of this has been anticipated. There will be nothing she will be asked that she will be surprised by. And I'm sure she is prepared with very good answers of her own, but also that have been offered to her by the team that has given her. This has all been run through and rehearsed, quite frankly, with somebody playing Jeff Sessions in the most aggressive and probably more so than he will be fashion. So she's ready.
Wouldn't you like to know who they picked to play Jeff Sessions?
Well, I've asked, but I've been told that it's all off the record.
Todd Zwillick, you don't know. Todd Zwillick, who was the role-playing Jeff Sessions for the White House in this? Any idea?
Brian, we were speculating about this very question in the press pool this morning, waiting for everyone to get set up. The consensus.
Rahm Emanuel, tell me.
Emanuel.
I got it. Right, because he's got that bulldog personality, right?
Yeah, I just want to point out I have no factual basis for that assertion whatsoever. That was all just us.
By the way, is there going to be some blowback on Sessions himself? Because, you know, he's a very racially controversial figure. I'm going to read a little bit from an NPR piece, transcript of this piece last month. And it says, in 1986, then U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions was himself in the hot seat after being nominated by President Ronald Reagan for a federal judgeship. His nomination was later rejected by the Senate Judiciary Committee, in part because of testimony by J. Gerald Hebert, a former senior trial attorney in the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. And then he would say, Hebert said, quote, when the NAACP would come up, Sessions would snidely remark that it was a pinko organization or communist-inspired. Sessions seems to have an unprogressive attitude toward race and equal opportunity. Interesting that this would, you know, be on our docket today on the 100th anniversary of the NAACP, mm-hmm. when that's such a big thing going on in New York. There are questions to be asked about Jeff Sessions and his rhetoric about things like that even today. Do you think, Todd, that senators on the committee, Democratic senators, will bash back at Jeff Sessions with any of this stuff, or they will just let sleeping dogs lie?
I think let sleeping dogs lie is the answer, because Democrats on this committee, look, they have the votes, the president has the support, and so there's really nothing to be gained by getting into a low-level mudslinging fight on the committee, which is what this would turn into if they were to do that. So I think that's pretty unlikely, but it is sort of interesting. You mentioned Jeff Sessions' history as a former nominee before the very committee that he's now the ranking member of, and talk about empathy. He's one of the only people around who knows just what it's like to be in that hot seat as a federal court nominee, and to face a skeptical and angry committee because he was rejected himself. Sessions has said, and other Republicans on the committee have said, that they don't plan to try to filibuster this nominee, that they expect her to be confirmed, but that they think that this nomination is about some broader issues. And Supreme Court nominations always are. They're always about more than the nominee who's sitting across from you. You know, parties use these occasions when the public is really paying attention to define their ideology, define their attitude about jurisprudence and about judicial activism or lack thereof, about race issues, about abortion, about sexual politics. This is what these events are for, because the public is really paying attention. Use it to define yourself against the other party, the base of each party. It's really about the base, you know, the loud base. The base of each party really cares about these things. You know, the far right really cares about judicial activism and the Second Amendment, and the far left really cares about abortion rights. And so everybody's watching. And just to be totally honest about it, they raise a lot of money off this stuff, too.
Yeah.
These hearings are worth a lot of fundraising letters, a lot of ginning up the base. So if everyone expects Sonia Sotomayor to be confirmed, and they do unless something happens in this next couple of days that the Republican side really gains some traction on, then it becomes about a lot more than her. It becomes about positioning the parties and raising those funds.
So let's go back in live and see if Jeff Sessions is throwing red meat to his base right now.
Senators on the Democratic side, based on seniority, I've told Senator Sessions.
All right, so Sessions just finished, and they threw it back to Chairman Leahy, who's just talking about housekeeping and how this is going to go. Todd, I know you got to go. You got to get back in the room there. When do you just got to tell me, when does Al Franken go?
I can tell you when he goes, Brian. Dead last. you might have just heard
seniority. This was, go by seniority, right?
That's the rule in the Senate is seniority, and as famous as Al Franken is, you know, I think he's probably the second or third most famous senator, right? You've got probably John McCain and Ted Kennedy are as widely known. And Al Franken, even though he's a ranked freshman, it was like Hillary Clinton when she came here. She was a freshman, but she was famous. And so in seniority, you're last, but in notoriety, you're first. And it's a you know, if you thought the Republicans were walking a fine line with criticizing the first Hispanic nominee, and they are, good old Al Franken is walking a fine line between being very well known and having a lot of notoriety and being a celebrity and being last in seniority. And I have a feeling that the last in seniority will take precedence here. Do not expect him to crack a joke. do not expect him to be, you know, maybe a polite joke, they all do, but I don't think he's going to be doing any funny. And he's going to have to wait till the end. They're doing opening statements, and they don't expect to get through all the senators till sometime around the 2 or 3 o'clock hour today. So if you want to see Al Franken, hang with us until 2 or 3 o'clock, or if you have to go work, make sure you tune back in.
All right, yes, and we have the whole thing live streaming on our website, WNYC.org. We'll be in and out throughout the day here on the radio stations. And look, at least when he does a polite funny, it'll really be funny. So
he'll really get the big payoff line. Oh, yeah.
We'll listen to that. Todd, I'll let you go back in the room. Thank you very much. Todd Twillick from The Takeaway. And Jamie Floyd is still with us for another couple of minutes. Jamie, I saw an article about something called the Syracuse University Transactional Records Access Clearinghouse. They definitely need a new name. Analyzing Sotomayor's decisions. And they found that across all 261 of her criminal cases, Judge Sotomayor was more likely to send convicted criminals to prison than her colleagues. Do you know about that?
Yes, actually, in fact, we have read that quite carefully here because our network, as you may or may not know, focuses quite a bit on the criminal law, and my show is about the defense perspective. And so we were very, very interested in her record on criminal law and criminal procedure, and I was somewhat surprised to learn of her record, and I think perhaps some of the senators have been as well.
And it goes on to say, interestingly, that the record also shows that she was notably tougher in her sentencing of white-collar criminals than was typical in this district. So as the Times put it the other day, Bernie Madoff, you don't want to go before Judge Sotomayor.
Right. I think there have been assumptions made, Brian, about her record based on her personal story. Her status as a Latina woman, as a woman who spoke English as a second language, the history of the father who died early, the mother who struggled to put these two young children through school. And we make assumptions about what her decisions would be as a judge, especially those of us who are not lawyers, who don't understand the role of a judge. And so then when you look at her record and learn that she's rather conservative, and I don't mean conservative politically, the way we use that word in terms of American politics, but conservative in her approach to the law, very methodical. And rather traditional as a judge, I think we're somewhat surprised. We expect an activist because of who she is as a person, but she's not an activist judge, in my view.
Jamie Floyd from the Legal News Network in session, anchor of the show Best Defense. Before you go, I'm going to digress to one other issue just for a minute, and then we're going to go talk to Tricia Rose about the NAACP Centennial Convention in New York, and we'll ask if they need a new name, seriously. But these new revelations about Vice President Dick Cheney, former Vice President, reportedly directing the CIA, them to withhold information about a secret surveillance program from congressional leaders, that withholding, which may even run afoul of the law. And here is Democratic Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois raising that question on ABC This Week yesterday.
Absolutely it does. Let me tell you, we have a system of checks and balances. There is accountability in our Constitution. The executive branch of government cannot create programs like these programs and keep Congress in the dark. There is a requirement for disclosure. It has to be done in an appropriate way so it doesn't jeopardize our national security. But to have a massive program that is concealed from the leaders in Congress is not only inappropriate, it could be illegal.
So, oh my goodness, Jamie Floyd, now we have members of the Senate talking about whether Vice President Cheney broke the law in office based on brand new revelations. What position does this leave Attorney General Eric Holder in?
Yeah, I think Holder is in a tough position and really has been since he took office, not just on these new revelations, but all sorts of things that we've known about. Obviously, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, the torture issues, as well as the wiretapping question that has been around for a long time. And now we hear about this. The White House, the Bush White House, as we know, had very strong views about presidential powers and executive privilege, views that I think will continue to come up. Brian, it's relevant to what we've been talking about, Sotomayor and the Supreme Court, which will be a newly constituted Supreme Court come this fall. They will continue to review these issues of executive privilege and presidential powers as relate to the Bush administration. And Mr. Holder will continue to be pressured to consider whether to look back, even though Mr. Obama, President Obama, has said he wants to look forward, that he does not want to go back and review what laws may have been violated by Mr. Cheney, Mr. Robe, Mr. Bush. And, of course, there's the Alberto Gonzalez question, the John Yoo question, all of those torture memos, all of which the Obama administration has said they don't want to go back and look at. But I think the pressure will increasingly come from Congress and from the American public to go back and take a look as new information comes out. And we may indeed have to have special prosecutors investigate. And I wouldn't be surprised if we do see some action from Eric Holder, who happens to be in New York this week on the NAACP. So all of this is relevant and related to your various segments today, Brian.
Absolutely.
And I think Dick Cheney is not entirely in the clear on this one.
All right. Jamie Floyd, good job as usual. Anchor of Best Defense on the In Session Network. Where is that, by the way, on New York cable? Do you know?
We are on Channel 21, and we're based right here in New York over by the United Nations.
All right. She was also part of the Clinton White House, where she worked on judicial vetting. Hope we can talk to you later in the week, Jamie. Thanks a lot.
Pleasure to talk with you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC and Tricia Rose coming up next on the NAACP and whether it bridges the generation gap into the hip-hop generation. We want your phone calls. If you are under 40, are you a member of the NAACP? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, as they hold their centennial in New York this week with President Obama coming to the city to speak.